This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Paranormal Pets. My name is Brandi Stark, and I am your host. And today we have Ellie Lax, who is our guest. And it's kind of interesting because the initial introduction I had to her was fascinating. And I really thought this would be something that not only is informational, but something that's practical. So she is really quite cool. She is a noted animal behaviorist and communicator. And actually, right before the show, my puggle went off on her barking spree, so maybe she'll have some comments for us as we go. But she has been training dogs since she was 11 years old and has rescued, rehabilitated, and found homes for hundreds of unadoptable dogs and cats. And she says it's all a matter of listening. She clearly has a gift for what she does, and she believes that better communication with our pets is a skill that can be learned and practiced by anyone. And I think that is a wonderful idea, and we are going to be speaking with her right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
So Ellie is with us right now, and I'm super excited to hear from you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I started with the general introduction, but we'd like to know a little bit more about you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I love these kinds of conversations. So I was born obsessed with animals. I think we all are, but I've never outgrown it. Ever since I was a very small child, I remember toddling barefoot into the woods behind my house and just sitting under trees. And wild bunnies would come and hop around me, and they were my friends. I remember being 6 years old and hearing a distress cry from an animal far outside my home. I heard it in my mind. And I was like, oh, here I come. And I walked down the street and took a left at the lake and a right by the shore. And sure enough, there was a little baby bird that had fallen out of her nest from a very, very tall tree. And I was like, oh, thanks for calling me. Here I am. I'll help you. And I brought her home and I fed her and raised her until she was big enough to fly away. I always could hear what animals were saying and they heard me back. And I thought it was normal. And to me, it wasn't surprising that I could talk to animals. To me, it was surprising that other people didn't operate that way. That was like the big shocker when I got into high school and started being teased and bullied for my gifts. That really confused me. The other thing that really confused me was that people around me didn't see animals the way that I did. To me, animals were my teachers, healers, and friends. They were the ones that I cried to and they listened. They were the ones that mirrored back to me that I was wanted and lovable. And they were the ones that encouraged me to keep going at times when I didn't want to be here. At 7 years old, I actually tried to end my life because the world looked so cruel to me that by seven, I was done already. And after several failed attempts, I went out to my garden to cry. And it was a hummingbird that flew into my face, hovered there for several moments, and told me that it was going to be okay, that I needed to stay, that there was a big reason why I was here. So my life has been full of those experiences.
Wow. And actually, I agree with you. I completely understand. I kind of joke with my, I teach college and I will joke with my students that, you know, there's a reason why when I go home, I only have pugs. I have pugs, rats, and bearded dragons. And there's totally a reason for that. And it is that nature of acceptance and love, and they're not malicious. I mean, they just seem so much kinder somehow than the rest of the world. So I really understand that. That's really cool. So you have had the animal communication element, and I think that's actually something I find quite fascinating. There are days where I kind of wish I knew exactly what my pugs and rats and bearded dragons were thinking, and then there are other days where I'm like, nope, I better not know that. Because I try to explain to folks that animals, and all animals, it's not just pets, but it's all animals, and that's Patroclus in the background, who apparently is agreeing, they are little people. They've got personalities, and science is just now starting to catch up, which I think is really interesting. As a person who does rodent rescue, I rescue domestic rats, not wildies, although I have folks that will take in and assist with wild rats that have been orphaned. But I've spent many years trying to tell people that rats are really not what they think they are. And science is finally catching up. There have been some articles that have come out about rats dream. They have empathy. They laugh. And they recently came out and said they think rats also fantasize. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, just like the rest of us, right? It's really cool. Now, you have gathered information, you have rehabilitated animals, you've done a lot to move this topic forward. So how did you really begin that research? How did you get your start as an animal communicator and in processing this information?
Yeah, so like I was saying before, I've been communicating with animals and them communicating with me since my earliest memories. It was just normal. But then I was teased at high school and I wanted to be quote unquote normal. And so I kind of denied myself my gifts and tried to be like everybody else. And that didn't work out very well. I think the minute that we start denying who we are, it's kind of like a slow, painful death. One day I realized that the only way to do this life and do it successfully is to own who I am. So I started examining, well, who am I? What are my gifts? And what have I come here to do? And ever since I was very, very tiny, the only thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to have a big place full of animals and show the world how beautiful they are. I thought that I could see animals so clearly as my teachers, healers, and friends. And I thought that if I could have a big place full of them, that I could show people the animals through my eyes. So it was my dream since I was 7, but it took me a really, really long time to finally do it. But about 25 years ago, I founded the Gentle Barn Foundation, where we take in severely abused and neglected animals that have nowhere else to go and rehabilitate them. And part of their rehabilitation is animal communication and talking to them, finding out what they've been through, what their past look like, what they need, what they want, and what can we do to care for them better. And so I practiced animal communication throughout the last 25 years with Gentle Barn. But then there were so many people that would find out about my gift and ask for help. And at first I kept it on the down low because I really didn't want to share openly that I was an animal communicator for fear of being teased. And it's been an incredible journey over the last 25 years, really fully embracing who I am, stepping into who I've always been meant to be, and kind of hold my head up high and do what I do without embarrassment or shame. And I have finally been able to do that over the last few years. And so now, finally, not only am I an animal communicator through the Gentle Barn and the animals that we rescue and care for, but now I'm also doing animal communication sessions, energy healing, and EFT tapping for clients around the world professionally.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Yeah, I can certainly understand. And it's interesting because what you describe, when I'm not being a professor and I'm not working in the arts, I am a paranormal investigator. I've done this and I started this before it became a thing. So I started in the late 90s. My team is the Spirits of St. Petersburg and it's 25 years old. It's the oldest in this area. And I've worked with a lot of people who have sensitivity. You know, I have yet to really get an animal communicator on the group though. I need to work on that. But anyway, it's interesting because they do describe the same thing. And I certainly understand because I've always felt a great need, even as a younger person, to be me. I went to an all-girls Catholic school, but I was not of the elite lineage from the local area. We did not come from, you know, a professional middle class, but, you know, not dripping with money. And as a kid, I liked things like Transformers and comic books and Thundercats and because I'm old now. Nobody knows those references. But anyway, it was really interesting because I didn't like shopping and I wasn't into, you know, boys and dating. And I was incredibly shy. And I do understand how it is. I think that does shape how we deal with our animals. I think there's a reason why, you know, some of us really are drawn to them. And like you, I have spent many years trying to achieve my own dream. And I got to be a full-time professor, and higher education was, well, it's a disaster right now. And it was so toxic. I stepped back to part-time. You know, I wanted to be a full-time artist, and that's a tough field, let me tell you. And I think my new goal is to, and I'm not letting go of the other two, understand, but I actually want to get and have a local paranormal museum. So I'm putting that out there for folks to hear. And if anybody finds a nice, inexpensive haunted property that I can utilize as the building, that'd be great. But it's interesting because the world doesn't always want you to be yourself. And I think that's where animals are so cool, because they do want you to be yourself. And I think that's delightful. And the more that you have the ability to go out and deal with different quirks and different personalities and connect people to animals, particularly those that are abused and neglected who really need that connection, I think that's fantastic. So can you tell us what kind of techniques do you utilize?
So there's a lot of things that I practice that all of us can practice to strengthen our intuition muscle. I think the first of which is to establish a meditation practice, a daily meditation practice. And so I meditate every single day. If I've got a lot going on, my meditations might be shorter, but my rule is I do not leave my bedroom without having meditated. Connecting to my higher self, breathing, being in the stillness and the quiet, that allows me to connect to my higher self. It allows me to connect to all living beings. It allows me to hear a louder voice from others. And really, that's where the answers are. So I think strengthening that muscle is key. The other thing that I do is I practice a plant-based diet, because I think when we're eating gently, then we are more connected, more intuitive, more open. But I think that when we are eating the energy of pain, violence, and suffering, that that can serve as blockages, and it could really cut us off from hearing and listening and feeling.
I tend to agree. And it's interesting because what you're saying echoes a little bit of the sentiment of Hinduism, which does promote vegetarianism. I mean, not straight across the board, because Hinduism is so pluralistic, but that idea that you are what you eat, right? And if you're consuming death, you know, then what happens? And in fact, bless his heart, I had a Hindu speaker, Dr. Sastry, who would say, you know, you can taste it. You know, you can taste the fear. And so, you know, vegetarianism is a good way to go. All right. So we have to slow down, quiet ourselves, which in this very chaotic world right now is difficult. We need to modify our diets. And I agree. I mean, being a vegetarian is actually, I would say it's gotten easier over the years, because vegetarian foods have gotten to be a lot better. I mean, it became a field, but it's not been wholly embraced. And I always think that's such a shame, because if you don't have to eat meat, I mean, I grew up with Star Trek as well. I was a Trekker when I was a kid. And the whole idea that you did not eat meat because you didn't have to. You know, these are molecules that are put together that mimic meat, but it is not an animal. You know, and this idea that it promoted reason and rationality and even a gentleness of human spirit, as long as you ignored Captain Kirk, like shooting up everything. But I always thought that was a really, heck, the Vulcans are vegetarian, right? It's a very fascinating element. All right, is there another tip that you recommend for folks? So slow down, meditate, eat, because what you are what you eat, essentially. So vegetarian diet.
Yeah, the third component that I would recommend is to switch off the phone, shut down the computer, switch off the television, and be present with our animals. We live in a very fast-paced, high-tech world where we are constantly bombarded with information. And it's very easy to sit with our animals and kind of have them in the periphery. Like, you know, they're ones in our lap, the ones at our feet, but we're paying attention elsewhere. And I think it's really important that we establish a ritual at least once a day for a while to sit and shut everything off and look them in their eyes and get to know them, Are they introverts or extroverts? Do they love activity or do they prefer to cuddle? What are their favorite places? What are their favorite snacks and treats? What's their favorite food? What's their favorite way to interact with you? Are they social butterflies and they want to go out and do things? Or do they want you to look longingly into their eyes and just stroke them and talk to them? Get to know them, because really our animals is the deepest relationship we're ever going to have. They are a constant. They're always there to greet us at the door. They sleep with us. They go through our sadness, our illnesses, our challenges. They are always there cheering us on and rooting for us. And we just need to shut down the noise and be present with them. And that will strengthen the bond. It will deepen our relationship with them. And it will also exercise that intuitive muscle.
Agreed. I agree. It's kind of funny because as you get to know your pets, you start to, you know, I know which ones are morning pugs and which ones are night pugs and who's the cuddler and who's the naughty one. And I'll tell folks that I have one pug that I'm pretty sure has the soul of a cat. That's Patroclus. And I have one pug that I think has the soul of a child, and that's Neoptolemus, because of their personalities. It's just kind of how they manifest themselves. And I find it fascinating because the more you let a pet be themselves, the more they are themselves, and the more comfortable it becomes. It's the same with the rats. It's the same with the bearded dragons. And, you know, it's funny because I, you know, 25 years ago, I never would have imagined having that conversation. One of my bearded dragons, her name is Pumpkin, because I got her around Thanksgiving, and she was a beautiful red orange color when I got her. She was the size of my index finger, little tiny thing. And she has matured. She's about 4 or 5 now, and she definitely has a personality. And I ended up doing a rescue from the SPCA for a second bearded dragon who's in his own enclosure, because my household has no babies, no babies allowed unless I adopt them. Otherwise, no other babies. But Falcon is, I almost describe him as a little, and this sounds terrible, but kind of like that little mafioso, the little Italian man who's very petite, but very machismo. You know, he's got that testosterone, and this is his territory. And it's fascinating, you know, and you watch the little dramas ensue, you know, who likes whom and who doesn't. And it's weird, but it's so fascinating as well. And it's kind of like seeing humanity on a micro level in your own household, you know, these communications and connections.
Science frustrates me because science will come up with these declarations like, oh, they do feel and they do have language. And I'm always sitting there going, well, duh. You know, I've known since I was a small child, we are all the same, just look different. And as an animal communicator, I will tell you that I've been invited to speak to an elephant, a tiger, a rat, a rabbit, a bird, a bear. And I remember going into these readings going, oh my God, I'm talking to a tiger and an elephant. This is so crazy, and a bear. But as soon as I made the introductions and I was underway talking to them, their voice was the same. We're literally all the same. Whether I'm talking to a person, a dog, a cat, a bear, a tiger, an elephant, a bird, a rabbit, a mouse, their voice is the same, but of course they have their different personalities, right? So every single living being is an individual. Every single living being has their own voice, their own preferences, their own worries and concerns. But it doesn't matter if we're animal or human. Our souls are the same. We all feel happy and sad sometimes. We all have best friends and love our families. We all feel scared for the same fundamental reasons. And we all just want a good life. And so if we humans could get past our outer exterior bodies and lifestyles and sounds, and we look closer to our hearts and souls, we will find that we're all the same.
Yes. And again, that's something that, and I've discussed this even with some of my classes now, I don't talk about animal communication, but just the philosophies of animals from the East to the West and the fundamental cultural differences, where on one side we're given dominion over nature, and on the other side, particularly with indigenous cultures, you're one with nature, right? Nature provides that supernatural connection. It is supernatural. It supports you. You support it. And there's a respect that goes back and forth, right? And in the East, I've always felt like they were very advanced because they say the same thing, right? Particularly if you're into monism of Hinduism, the idea that this entire world, this entire universe is really one substance with the Godhead, and simply that the perceptions and the way we interact with the world differs upon the level. And now religions, I will say, even in the East, they're going to say humanity is the one that rocks, right? We're the ones who can become Buddhas. We're the ones who can become enlightened. But I think they have a healthier understanding and connection to animals, with hopefully not getting into too much exoticism, than the West. There's a difference between a connection, a unity. In the Western ideology, the best we can say is that we're all connected through being creations. But again, that element of dominion.
I agree. And I think that the word dominion has been grossly, grossly misrepresented, misunderstood. And I don't think dominion means that we get to do whatever we want with them and that we're in charge and now they're for us to utilize. I think the word dominion means we have the responsibility to care for them, cherish them, protect them, and oversee them. And I think that one word has taken our entire civilization askew. And I think because of that, there is a lot of suffering, a lot of illness, and a lot of environmental problems because of that one word. Because if we were interpreting that one word, dominion, correctly from the beginning, we would be protecting them. We would be living among them. We would be connecting with them. We would not be eating them. And we would be having reverence for our planet, health in our bodies, and connection with animals. And so I almost think that it's our responsibility to bring us back to that, to bring us back to plant-based living, bring us back to connection with animals, to bring us back beyond science, to realize that we're all the same, we're all connected, and there is a voice that needs to be heard that we don't see with our own eyes, that we have to get to intuitively.
And there's a lot of depth and complexity to these thoughts and ideas and trying to get everybody to engage in them. It's an interesting reality. But what we're going to do for just a moment is we're going to pause and we're going to let our wonderful producer, Mark, put in a few sponsors. And then when we get back, we will talk a little bit more and wrap things up. So we will be back right after these messages.
Now, time for something really scary. A word from our sponsors. Paranormal pets will reappear before you can say Bigfoot. Don't run away.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Did you hear that? Our commercials have mysteriously disappeared. Paranormal Pets is back with our haunted host, our ghost host,
Brandi Stark. And welcome back. So, we have had just a most delightful conversation here about philosophy and animals and our role in the world and their role in the world. So with this base, let me ask you, what are some of your favorite success stories that you've had as an animal communicator?
Wow, I've had so many wonderful experiences. I have found lost animals, which has been really rewarding. Because through the communication, I was able to really relay where that animal was and even prevent searches that were going in the wrong direction so that they could find that animal. So that's been really rewarding. I've worked with people with behavioral issues and health issues. I had one time where I was talking to this animal who was having health challenges, and the doctor said that it was their spine, and he was book, he was scheduling their spine surgery. And thank goodness they booked an animal communication before the surgery, because when I talked to that animal was saying, it's not my spine at all, it's my pancreas. And so I relayed that information to the people, and the people were saying, no, this vet knows what he's doing. He's really certain that it's his spine. And I really encouraged them to get a second opinion, and they did. And the second opinion and further diagnostics revealed that it was indeed that animal's pancreas, and it avoided a very invasive spine surgery that would have been completely unnecessary. So that was really exciting. One of the other readings that I had that really has stayed with me was talking to a cat. I didn't have any other information other than the cat's picture, their name, their age, their gender, who they live with, and how long the people have had them. I knew nothing else about her. But when I spoke to her, she showed me being murdered by a friend of her, of the owner. She showed me how she was murdered. And then she proceeded to tell me to tell the mom that she needs to forgive him, that there are secrets to the universe that we'll never understand, that the cat and this gentleman had a contract for purposes that she doesn't need to go into. And she kept saying that she implores the mom to forgive him so that she could find peace in her own soul. And that was an incredible experience that will probably stay with me for the rest of my life.
I can only imagine, because all of that is so emotional and so powerful. That's incredible.
And then I did a reading just the other day that was really poignant as well. I spoke to a rabbit who can no longer walk or move. And so the veterinarian, seeing this immobile rabbit, is saying, it's time to euthanize her. And the woman wanted to hear from the rabbit herself before she scheduled that euthanasia. And the rabbit kept saying, please don't take me to that vet. Please don't make me go. Please don't euthanize me. I know that when you look at me, you think I have no value, but my life still has tremendous value. I enjoy sitting and watching the other rabbit run around. I enjoy cuddling with my mom. I enjoy being carried. I enjoy eating my crispy, juicy vegetables. My life still has so much meaning. Please don't make me go.
And I trust she listened.
She did. She listened, and she canceled that euthanasia. So she did. She canceled the appointment at the vet, and she recommitted to being present and loving and affectionate to her bunny rabbit, holding her and carrying her and still enjoying life. And we're probably going to do another check-in in a few months, or when things, you know, seem to change. But I think what's the lesson in this is we can never determine for anyone else the quality of their life and when they want to go. It's up to that one individual animal to say how they feel, what they want to need, and when it's time for them to cross over. I think my favorite part of animal communication is speaking with animals that have departed, because relaying messages and memories with their grieving human is so incredibly rewarding. It helps the grieving human so much and allows those animals that have transitioned to really have a voice and say all they need to say. It's my favorite thing in the whole wide world.
Absolutely. And I agree. I started doing some stories and research with animal ghost stories. And I've done research that, you know, I have 3 graduate degrees and a doctor, so I've had a lot of time to research stuff. And it's fascinating to kind of find this thread where animals will check in on their owners. And in general, what I found is cats will either be there for like 6 months or forever, right? They, you know, whereas canines, I have found in a lot of stories, a year or two, and then they kind of go on. But the relief that the owners feel, and in fact, my first interview with Paranormal Pets, I was a guest on this show many years ago, and I had started a Paranormal Pugs page, and I started, you know, I did it tongue in cheek, kind of as a lark, because pugs are very domestic. They are, and I've joked about this with the pugs, but if they dropped us in a rainforest, the pugs are about as street smart as I am, and we probably all eat the poison berries and die because we don't know any better. But so I kind of figured that pugs would not have much of a sensitivity towards the supernatural. And then people started sending me their stories of pugs sensing the supernatural, or pugs showing up as ghosts, or pugs communicating somehow. And what amazed me was the emails that I would get from folks that would say, I just had my pug die, and just reading this site has made me feel so much better. And I think maybe that's part of that Western disconnect, that certain elements of Western culture do not attribute souls to anything beyond humanity and an existence beyond humanity. And that's part of the reason why I love bringing folks onto this show that talk about animal awareness, because the question of the supernatural is if a personality, in part, at least in my field, if a personality survives outside of the body, right? If we have that individual mindset and identity that we survive death as a remnant of who we were. And I think that's so important when it comes to animals as well, to show that they have that individuality, that self-awareness, that mindset, and that consciousness. It would indicate that absolutely there's a lovely afterlife for animals. My general opinion is that they probably reincarnate. And I do wonder, Neoptolemus is my special little boy, because there's always one that's, you know, just that soulmate for you. And I've oftentimes wondered if he isn't one of my original pugs named Odyssey come back, because Odyssey was a very clever boy. And Neo is, I swear, he is like a five-year-old little boy in there. It's crazy. And I try to tell this to folks, and you know, you have to kind of do it very lightly so that folks don't give you that weird look, but they probably still do, and I just don't know it. But I think that's fantastic. And I think that that's actually something I had not thought about, in the sense of when you have an animal preparing to pass over, bringing in an animal communicator and verifying they are ready to go. I think that in and of itself is a fascinating topic.
End-of-life decisions are really, really difficult for us, right? Because there's the guilt and the regret, and is it the right thing? Is it not the right thing? And you feel like you're, you know, making them leave. And it's such a burden and a responsibility. But when you can talk to an animal communicator like me, and I can talk to the animal and say, do you want to leave? And how? Do you not want to leave? And what can they do to support you? Do you have a bucket list? Are there things that you want to experience before you go? I've talked to so many animals who give me these long bucket lists. They say, I want to go back up on that hill and I want to look at the view with you one more time. Or I want to go hiking with you one more time, but we'll walk really, really slow. Or I want to go see the ocean one more time. I mean, they have bucket lists just like we do. So to get that bucket list for the people so that they can spend the last weeks or months doing all of these wonderful things and creating even more memories and fulfilling those animals' desires before they depart, it's a beautiful thing. And some animals want to pass on their own, and some animals want help out of their bodies. So to get those answers straight from the horse's mouth, if you will, it's such a comfort, and it takes so much of the burden off the shoulders of the people, because now they're just fulfilling their animals' wishes. And speaking about animals that have crossed over, it's so interesting how in our culture we talk about going over the rainbow bridge or going to heaven. And when I talk to animals that have crossed over, they tell me they've not gone anywhere. They show me things that their owners are still saying to them, or they tell me the songs that the owners are singing to them, or they show me visuals of what the people are actually doing for proof that they're still with them. And the animals keep saying, we're still right here. We're going to be part of you. All you have to do is think of us, and we'll be as close as your hands and feet. All you have to do is ask us a question and sit in the quiet, and the answers will come. We're still with you. And sometimes the animals say, please, you're in that house alone. This is not right. Please get another animal. Or sometimes they'll say, you've been stuck at home with me for 10 years caring for me, but now you're finally free. Please go on that trip. They have advice for us. They have words of wisdom for us. They have instructions for us. And getting to hear from them is just so important, really, at any stage of their life and beyond.
Absolutely. I've had some friends that are very dedicated to their pets. And this drives me personally nuts when folks are like, well, I don't want to have another pet because it hurts too much when they die. And I'm like, okay, first of all, let's change that thinking. Yes, it's painful, and yes, there's grief, but think about all of the happiness that they brought you and all of the happiness in their lives. That's something I actually learned from the rats, because rodent lives are so short, you know, 2 to 3, maybe 4 years. I think the best I've done is about 3.5. But the first thing is, when they're out in the wild, they live 9 months to a year. So domestic, they're already doubling or tripling that lifespan. But in that time, they're just happy. They're happy little pets, and it's really cool. So just that element of people who say, I can't do it, it's too much pain. It's hard for me, because I want to say, well, you're being very selfish, and I can't do that because I respect their grieving. But lo and behold, There's been at least two people that told me that. And about a couple months later, they adopted somebody else. You know, they adopted a new pet. And in fact, I just had this conversation with the co-creator of a ghost tour that I do in Roser Park, a historic haunts tour. And he has a cat that adopted him. He was actually on this podcast earlier this year. And the cat's name is Raw. And I met with him because we're getting ready to do another tour. And Raw was just delightful. He's an older cat though. And I said, so is there ever going to be a Raw Junior? And he said, oh no, this is it, because Raw is so much to handle. And I said, no, you're going to be adopted again, because Raw adopted this man as his owner. And I'm like, no, something will show up for you. But again, it's that same, I just don't know how people live without pets. It's just, it's strange. And I think there is a nature of giving that comes with being a pet owner. And I do try to encourage people. And I think that's great that even the animals are like, yes, please get another one. That is wonderful. Or, you know, take a break from pets. You know, go out and travel. And then when you come back, you know, be ready. That's delightful.
You know what we do a lot of times? We think that in order to honor and connect with our animal that has transitioned, we need to be sad, and that to be happy would kind of be betraying them or forgetting them. And our animals are always on the other side going, no, we want you to be happy. We want you to move on. We want you to love again. We want you to move forward. Please stop suffering on our behalf, and please start living, because that's how we get to be happy on the other side.
Yes. And I think that's important. I don't know that you always get that from other humans. I think we do it, but somehow we've culturally disconnected from ourselves, but that's a whole different topic. But I think it's, yeah, I agree. I think animals are very giving in that sense. And, I think once they know somebody who's a good owner, you know, they will share those skills. So that is fantastic. Now, as we're getting kind of at the end of our little podcast here, if people want to contact you or learn more about you or your techniques, I believe you had publication, yes? How can they find this material? How can they find you? What are the best ways for folks to get a hold of you?
So to find out about my animal communications, how it works, some success stories, and how my energy healing and EFT tapping works as well, people can come to ellielax.com and they can read all about me and they can book a session. And of course, to find out about the animals and the work that we do here at the Gentle Barn, and maybe even come and hug a cow, cuddle a turkey, give a pig a tummy rub, and hear their stories of resilience, please check out gentlebarn.org.
That is fantastic. And just so folks, just in case they don't look at the little podcast blurb, but it's ellielax.com. Is that correct?
Yes, please. And I also wrote a book called My Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary Where Animals Heal and Children Learn to Hope. And it's not only about my childhood and why I started the Gentle Barn and all those early years, but it's also about how animal communication played a part in those early years and me healing and listening to those animals. And my next book comes out in May, and it's called Cow Hug Therapy. And it's going to be about how all of these amazing, matriarchal, powerful animals have taught me about life.
I'm going to ask you to send me a press release, and I think we'll plan to do another podcast then, if that's okay with you, in May, maybe dealing with some of those topics.
I would love that.
I would too. Congratulations. Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast. I'll just give folks a quick update for the spirits of St. Petersburg. We are preparing for Valentine already. So October ended. I barely survived. I actually got my Google stats, and it was like, you were in the car for 48 hours driving 7,000 miles. I mean, it was crazy. I don't want to do that again. Actually, I do. I love it every year. I just forget how tired I get. And then it's like the next Halloween rolls around. I'm like, all right, let's go do it all. And then at the end, I'm like, why am I so tired? So it's a cycle. But we are getting ready for Valentine, which is, of course, the spirits of St. Petersburg own holiday for second Halloween in February for kind of those gothic folk like myself out there. And we will be doing an art show. It's an Edgar Allan Poe themed show, loosely based on the Tale Tale Heart, but anything Edgar Allan Poe, so that will be at Art Lofts. And we will be doing a Valentine ghost tour in historic Rosa Park again. So definitely feel free to check that out on the Spirit site. Otherwise, I want to thank everybody for another wonderful podcast. I hope you enjoy. Congratulations on surviving Krampusnacht, which was actually just a couple days ago. So if you were not taken away by Krampus, then you are well on your way to the other December holidays, and congratulations to you. We will be back next episode. I hope you guys have some happy hauntings and happy holidays if I don't talk with you soon. Take care.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets every week only on PetLifeRadio.com.